Thank you for joining us. This is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Fisheries Pod. And if you are the more generous sort, you could be like Ben, Tyler, Janet, Robin, and John, who all support the podcast through Patreon. Through Patreon, you're able to support the show with either a recurring or one-time donation, which helps us pay for various parts of the show. If that isn't your thing, you can also purchase Fisheries Pod shirts, hoodies, stickers, and face masks on our Teespring store if you feel inclined. So check it out. Earlier in the week, I sent out a plea for a volunteer guest for this episode and was fortunate enough to get a few generous volunteers. The first of those to raise their hand was Alex Faceville. Alex grew up in St. Charles, Illinois, where he developed a passion for fish and water through fishing. From there, the dream of researching fish was both founded and realized at Xavier University in Cincinnati, Ohio. Alex received his master's degree in fisheries science from New Mexico State University and has assisted with research in Ohio, Kentucky, and Alaska, but currently he is pursuing a PhD in natural resource ecology and management at Oklahoma State University. Alex's research focuses on population dynamics and ecology of striped bass in river reservoir complex, specifically focused on sources of angling mortality. Alex is also an avid angler, both conventional and fly, insisting he has never caught a small fish in his life. Welcome to the podcast, Alex.
Thanks for having me on, Nick. Big fan of the show.
So it's quite the claim to have never caught a small fish, and I suppose since small is a relative measure, then it really depends on your goals as to whether you've ever caught a small fish or not. What do you typically fish for?
I fish for a variety of things. I think I throw that in there because at my core, I'm an angler, and there's always a little bit of fibbing that goes on with my fish tails. But, striped bass, largemouth, growing up in the Midwest, a lot of times it was muskie, pike, walleye. Really, I think at my core, I love muskie fishing. And so I like to think I never catch small fish.
You grew up in St. Charles, which is kind of on the edge of Chicagoland. Were there a lot of opportunities for you to go fishing when you were growing up?
Yeah, I'd say there were a decent amount. I was lucky enough that my dad always had a boat growing up. So we'd go up to Wisconsin and we'd, hit the white bass run on the Winnebago chain up there, or you'd go up to Minnesota or Ontario muskie and pike fishing. I had a lot of opportunities to go fishing growing up, and that's definitely where my love of fish stems from.
And most of the guests that I have interviewed tend to leave little interesting pieces out of their bios they send me, and for you it was that you used to fish competitive high school bass tournaments. How did you find yourself getting into competitive fishing?
That's an interesting little nugget. I actually started competitive fishing in high school freshman year, and that just happened to coincide with it becoming a state sport in Illinois. So I had a few buddies. We always went fishing around the ponds in Illinois. We'd get into trouble fishing for large. We'd find any pond we possibly could trying to fish for largemouth. And so that naturally kind of developed into, we can do this competitively. That seems like fun. We're all competitive guys. So we started doing that. And then in college, they had a bass fishing team at Xavier. We were lucky enough to have a couple boats at our disposal. And I basically spent all the time, maybe a little too much time that I wasn't in school, going fishing and fishing for bass or, other species too.
Another thing I found when I Googled your name was that you fished the FLW series while you're at Xavier University. Did you go to Xavier specifically for the bass fishing team opportunity, or was that kind of an added bonus at a school that you had already decided to go to for academic reasons?
Yeah, that was kind of an added bonus. I don't even think I realized there was a bass fishing team until I got there. Once I did, though, I latched onto that. I was like, oh, this is very familiar to me. But no, that wasn't the initial reason. Although I do think it is wild that there are, bass fishing scholarships and stuff, which is awesome.
Where were some of the destinations you were fortunate enough to go fish tournaments at?
Let's see. I fished the Potomac River, Lake Chautauqua in western New York. I fished a tournament in Southwest Ohio around Cincinnati where Xavier is. Kentucky Lake down in Kentucky. Yeah, a bunch of different places. I was lucky enough to kind of get around and see some of the cool bass fishing areas and just areas of the country.
Did you ever get a hoist a trophy up at the end of the tournament, or were you kind of middle of the pack?
We were usually middle of the pack. We one time made it to, there's little qualifier events and then like a regional event and a national event. We made it to the regional event one time, but I didn't always do too well in the tournaments I fished, even though I do consider myself a pretty good fisherman.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of those guys that are really good at the tournament fishing are just, they're just that another level above really good fishermen. They just have something else in them.
It's true. Yeah.
So another exclusion from your bio was your past dabblings in the field of entomology. What can you tell us about burying beetles?
I can tell you they're really stinky. I studied specifically Necrophorus defoedians up in Alaska. It was a summer position in my undergrad, and we were really trying to look at, I don't want to get into the weeds of organic chemistry here, but we were looking at the pheromones of this beetle. And so they emit pheromones to attract mates. And we were looking specifically at the two different enantiomers, which is just different structural makeup of the molecule of this pheromone. We were trying to figure out which one is the correct one. And so that actually involved I had to catch the beetles, which to catch them, we use really any kind of carrion, but we were using salmon up there in Alaska. And I would put out these traps in trees. They're one of the only burying beetles that actually will mate in trees or use the pheromones in trees. And so we put these traps in the trees, mostly just to try to keep them away from bears. I put them as high as I could, and you'd have this rotting salmon, and you'd have to hold your nose and you're gagging the whole time as you're trying to get these beetles out. And half the time it would turn into a soupy mess because it was raining all the time, and bears would still end up getting to the rotting salmon. So they're really stinky. That's my main takeaway from burying beetles.
So was it the rancidness of rotting fish carcasses that led you to wanting to study the live versions of fish? Or how did you make the switch from beetles to fish, at least in the academic world?
Yeah, that actually might have been part of it. But in reality, at Xavier's a pretty small university. I was a biology major, and really the only organismal people there did invertebrate stuff. And so I ended up working in a lab where I did macro invert stuff. And I also did this burying beetle project. And so that was kind of my foot in the door to research. And my heart really was always with fish, and that's what I wanted to do. But the opportunities in undergrad were mostly insect related.
So when it came time to graduate and then move on to the next chapter in your career, were you always thinking a master's degree, or was it something that you realized that you kind of needed to do after doing some maybe temporary or seasonal positions?
I went straight into my master's after undergrad, but I didn't realize until my senior year of undergrad when I was talking to the advisor that I worked for at Xavier doing this burying beetle project. I didn't realize that grad school was really even an option. And she told me, she was like, you only go to grad if you're not getting paid to go to grad school in this field, you're not doing it right. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I can get paid too. And so I ended up just starting to look for fish positions my senior year. And I think I ended up getting kind of lucky with the one I found.
Yeah. So eventually you made your way to the Southwest and New Mexico State University studying your old friend, the largemouth bass. And you specifically were determining natal origin of the species in Elephant Butte Reservoir. Were you looking to see where in the reservoir these fish were spawning, or was it more of if they came from a hatchery? I guess what was important about natal origin of these fish?
Yeah, so the microchemistry part of that, where we were trying to figure out natal origin, was because there was a stocking program for these fish, and the fish were stocked from multiple different places. So they'd get some from New Mexico, they got some from Arkansas, and then Montana even shipped whatever leftover bass fry they had, they would actually ship down to New Mexico, and they would stock those too. So there are three different locations they'd stock fish from, and they wanted to know, are these fish being successful, or are they successfully recruiting when they were stocked? And if they're successful, which of these hatcheries are they coming from?
What did you find with that? Was one of the states more successful than the others, or were they all kind of about the same?
We found that it's kind of a needle in a haystack looking for these fish a little bit, because really you don't want to sacrifice obviously too many fish to get their otoliths and do this microchemistry work. So we found a few. So there are fish that are recruiting into the adult population that are from hatcheries, but I don't think we don't have enough to say, or we didn't end up with enough to say exactly which hatcheries are maybe the most successful. However, you know, I'm in my PhD, but we are still working on some of my master's stuff to get it published. And so there will be some additional otoliths being analyzed for natal origin.
And you also evaluated how different environmental factors might have influenced the timing and persistence of largemouth bass reproduction. I guess, how did you assess that? Were you out watching known bass bed locations, or were you just kind of waiting to see when you could see maybe some largemouth bass fry?
So yeah, my thesis was kind of, you know, those two parts, and they're related in a way, but yeah, we had this one aspect that was the reproduction, and what we were actually looking at was estradiol levels. So estradiols are reproductive. It's a reproductive hormone, found in most vertebrates, I think. And particularly for fish, you can follow these changes in estradiol over time. So we would go out and we'd sample fish monthly or even biweekly, and we'd get blood samples and we bring them back to the lab, and we'd assess the resulting plasma we get from these samples for estradiol levels. And so we were able to relate the timing of reproduction based from with environmental variables to these estradiol levels throughout the course of a year.
So what kind of environmental stressors were you considering? I guess, did you uncover one that you hadn't thought of when you first started?
So I don't think we uncovered anything we hadn't thought of, but the glaring thing in New Mexico is the amount of water. You just don't have very much water. And Elephant Butte Reservoir, where I did my work, is the largest reservoir in New Mexico. And it has these huge, it's an irrigation reservoir on the Rio Grande, and it has these huge water level fluctuations, because what essentially happens is during irrigation season, they release a bunch of water and then they shut it off at the end of irrigation season, because if they allowed the river to just keep flowing, the reservoir would just dry up. So as you can imagine, during April and May, the time when these largemouth bass are spawning, they're drawing irrigation releases out of the reservoir. And unless the snowmelt is enough where it can kind of counteract the irrigation releases, the reservoir is dropping pretty rapidly. I think at one point it was dropping 3 to 4 inches per day, maybe even a little faster than that. So this was, we figured this water level rate of change, how fast that reservoir comes down, could be a real problem for the reproduction of these fish. And however, we kind of found that, you know, the reproduction was pretty consistent from year to year. We really saw almost the exact same time frame of these bass spawning. And so I guess to double back around, how we determined when exactly they were spawning is we collected young of the year largemouth bass and aged the daily rings on their otoliths to back calculate these hatch dates. So we knew both years they're spawning about the same time, but the real management objective was to determine a time where they could maybe hold the reservoir steady and allow these bass a chance to spawn during this irrigation season and during coinciding with when the bass were spawning. And so we were able to give them a window of like these fish based on temperature, photo period, the things that make fish spawn, especially largemouth. When it's right, these fish are going to be spawning, and it looks like it's going to be about the same time yearly. So we were able to tell New Mexico Game Fish, hey, if you hold the water for these 10 days, you're at least going to give the fish a chance. Now, will they recruit into the population if you start dropping the reservoir again after that? We don't know, but you're at least giving them a shot.
You mentioned in between your bachelor's and master's, you kind of had your mind made up that you were going to continue on. Was it a similar story in between your master's and PhD? Did you know that you were going to go on to the next level of your academic career?
Well, for my PhD, it was a little different. I think once I was in my master's, I realized near the end of my master's, I realized I really enjoy research and being challenged and kind of the quest for knowledge, I guess, to put it in a cliche sense. But I found this position with striped bass in Oklahoma, and it kind of just fit. It fit my interests. It fit some of my strengths. And that was the only PhD position I applied for. I saw that one. I applied for it. I knew that fit me. And I just jumped straight into it. So yeah, I did jump straight into it. Like I jumped straight from my undergrad to my master's, then to PhD, but it was a little different circumstances where I kind of knew what I was looking for there.
And we mentioned in the bio and kind of hinted at it in some of the answers, but you're currently at Oklahoma State University studying the population dynamics and ecology of striped bass. And striped bass are an anadromous fish native to the East Coast. So how did they wind up in Oklahoma?
Yeah, that's a good question. So striped bass were first landlocked in the Santee Cooper River system in, I want to say, 1949, just accidentally. The dam was built for Santee Cooper Reservoir, and there were some striped bass that were trapped behind the dam. And soon after, the state of South Carolina realized these fish are reproducing, and there's a thriving striped bass population. And so after that, there was a boom of stocking stripers into inland waters. And this was one of those spots. So particularly in Oklahoma, you have Lake Texoma, which is part of the Red River that has a naturally reproducing population. And then there's the population that I'm studying, which is part of the Arkansas River, specifically Robert S. Kerr Reservoir and the tailwaters of the Lower Illinois River and the Canadian River.
So I guess what kind of information are you hoping to learn about these populations? I guess how will what you uncover help the management of this species in Oklahoma?
So this is another situation, I think, similar to my master's, where there's a very clear management purpose for my project. And it's that these striped bass can't handle water temperatures in most landlocked systems when they get above, say, 75 degrees Fahrenheit or so. And so what ends up happening is they either crowd into right near the thermocline if they're in a reservoir, where, however, in this case, in Robert S. Kerr Reservoir, it's too shallow to have a thermocline. So what you have are these tributaries that are, one of them is a hypolimnetic release from 10 Killer Reservoir. That's the Lower Illinois River. And then you have a release from Eufaula Reservoir, which is the Canadian River. It's not hypolimnetic, but it still stays cooler. So these fish really congregate in these two tailwaters. And the state, Oklahoma Department of Wildlife, is worried about potentially how many fish are potentially being harvested. So that there's a 5 fish limit and there's no length regulations. And so how many fish are being harvested? Do fish have high mortality rates? Do these stripers have really high mortality rates when they're caught and released that's of interest to us. When are these fish moving? Are they going in between the two tailwaters? Are they going just back into the reservoir? You know, the immigration and emigration in this system. So it's kind of multiple aspects of the population dynamics. We're also trying to get an estimate of abundance. So really just to get a picture of this striped bass population and how regulations might be changed to ensure its persistence.
Well, you mentioned that you're going to be looking at angling mortality. Are you going to be able to fish for these striped bass yourself, or are you kind of relying on other anglers or maybe even guides?
Yeah, so there's some delayed hooking mortality study that we're going to be doing, and I'm planning on doing, I might recruit some anglers to help with that, but it sounds too fun for me to pass up fishing for stripers. So yeah, we're going to start that up pretty soon, and I'm going to be doing a lot of striper angling this summer.
And then after you catch them, are you implanting them with transmitters and kind of tracking to see where they go? And I'm assuming based off some of your earlier answer that telemetry is a big component of your project?
Yeah, telemetry is a component of the project. We have a few different components, one of those being, you know, telemetry. And we're not going to implant the transmitters in the delayed hooking mortality study, but there's actually a method that has been rarely used in the literature, but I think we're going to try it, where you basically attach a float to a transmitter and then externally attach that to a fish with like a dissolvable suture. And so you can quickly attach that after you catch the fish and just release it back into the river. And eventually that suture is going to dissolve and you'll be able to get your transmitter back after you've tracked that fish and determined whether it was a mortality or not. So I'm pretty excited to get that going, but a little nervous because there's a lot of logistics that come with a delayed hooking mortality study, especially in the field.
Well, you mentioned you're going to be doing a lot of angling for striped bass there on Texoma, or I guess I'm assuming a lot of it on Texoma, but also on Kerr Reservoir. But there's probably also a lot of bass fishing tournament trails around in Oklahoma. Have you looked up any of those, or do you have any time to fish tournaments anymore?
You know, I really don't have any time to fish tournaments anymore. I don't even know where I pack that into my schedule. And the amount of time you have to put in for a tournament to actually compete is kind of crazy, to be honest. But I, you know, I growing up muskie fishing and pike fishing up in the upper Midwest, I've actually really enjoyed striper fishing down here. And it helps that I kind of know where these fish are. So that helps a little bit that I can locate them in the lower Illinois and Canadian rivers here.
Are you planning on capitalizing on some of the paddlefish snagging opportunities Oklahoma offers this spring?
Oh man, you know, I really should. I really should capitalize on that Keystone Reservoir here, as you might be familiar with, has been a source of a lot of attention with the paddlefish lately. I think 2 world records last year with fish over 100 pounds. Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I would like to fish for some of them. I might have to do that this spring if I can catch some time in between fishing for stripers.
Well, Alex, I wish you the best of luck as you work towards your PhD, but now the tough part of the interview is over, as we are down to the final 5 questions. And this is a group of 5 questions I ask each of the guests that come on the show. And we always start real simple with, what is your favorite fish?
So I was thinking about this for a while, and I think I have to go with muskie. I'm a glutton for punishment. I love throwing a 16-inch lure all day and not catching anything. And I have to go with a fish that I fished for as a kid. I mean, we'll always have a soft spot.
So throughout the episode, we've highlighted some of the different career stops you've made and some of the different places you've been fortunate enough to gather field experience: Kentucky, Ohio, Alaska, New Mexico, and now Oklahoma. And all those are probably some pretty great places, but do you have a favorite memory from your career so far?
I have a lot of really good memories from the field. I think field work is great, but I'd have to say a lot of my favorite memories, especially from grad school, are with my fellow lab mates, with advisors, with the people I've been able to, you know, really, that's what's gotten me to this point is the people I've met along the way. And so, and those are most of the, my best memories of grad school so far.
And similarly, you've worked in all those different locations, but what is your dream job or dream location that you're hoping to wind up in once you're all finished there at Oklahoma State?
Well, I'm really a sucker for large fish, and since this PhD started, I'm also a sucker for large complex systems. They're really challenging and they can be a total headache, but I think they're really cool to research. So it'd be a research scientist studying large fish in a large complicated system.
And if money was not an issue, what is one project that you would like to work on?
Man, if money was not an issue, I would taking one of those complicated systems, like a river reservoir complex, or, you know, an estuary, whatever it may be, taking that and studying the entire thing, putting out an astronomical number of, you know, pit tags, reward tags if it's a fish that is angled, transmitters to track them, and just really truly understand the population dynamics that are occurring in one of these like large open systems. I think having the actual answers to that would be invaluable.
And finally, if there is one point or principle that you could have programmed into everyone's head, what would it be?
Going back to a memory that I have as a kid of anglers on the Mississippi River fishing up at a dam, throwing Red Horse onto the riprap, and me trying to save them all, I'd say there are no trash fish. They're all fish deserve respect, and especially native and endemic species like that.
Now, when you first started saying throwing Red Horse up on the bank in the riprap, I thought you were saying maybe they're throwing live bait for muskies or something, but no, that's a common problem, people throwing quote-unquote trash fish up on the bank, so that's a good one.
Yeah, as a kid, that definitely traumatized me and probably led to me doing fish research in the future.
Well, Alex, thank you for coming on the podcast today. It was a pleasure hearing about you and all of your past experiences with beetles and bass. If people want to find out more information or get a hold of you, what would be the best way to do that?
I'd say my Twitter, at Fish and Sci, like fish and chips, but Fish and Sci. And my email is my full name, alex.vaisville@okstate.edu. I'd say those are the two best ways.
And if you would like to get a hold of me or any of the other co-hosts, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Fisheries Pod, or old-fashioned email feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. You can download past, present, and future episodes on your favorite listening app or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. And don't forget, you can help support the podcast with a monthly or one-time contribution through Patreon, or by rocking some awesome Fisheries Podcast logo shirts, hoodies, and face masks available on Teespring. I am Nick Kramer, and thank you for listening to the 112th episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, there are no trash fish.